Hey, welcome to Big Jim's Garage. I'm Big Jim O'Brien, host of the morning show here at CSX, Big Jim's House. And, of course, house has to have a garage. We love to talk cars and racing. And I'm pumped up about this one. We're going to get to NASCAR a little bit later on. We'll talk about Kevin Harvick being a big fat cheater. But first, Eddie Cheever. IndyCar is back, man. Cannot wait on ABC St. Pete this Sunday at 12:30 p.m. here on Channel 7 in the Motor City. Hi, Eddie. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. How are you?
We're fantastic up here in Detroit. We're getting more snow. We're so excited about that.
Get used to it. It's the Midwest.
Absolutely. What was the worst weather you ever drove in? Between F1 and all the different series, what was the worst, like, what the hell am I doing out here weather moment?
The worst weather I ever drove in was in Belgium and Spa in a Grand Prix. I could not see 100 yards ahead of me.
So,
in Europe, you race when it's wet. In the States, you don't that often. So it was a challenge.
Now, from, you know, obviously watching F1 and seeing Spa, not exactly a slow course. I mean, when you're heading up the hill in some of those big sweeping turns, how much do you change your speed in the rain? Or you really couldn't, could you? You just had to go for it?
You drive it exactly the same way you would in the rain, in as much as you have to find the limit and always be just a teeny little bit underneath it. The problem with the rain is not just that it's slippery. It's that when the cars are ahead of you, they have this big cloud of water that they lift up. That's very hard to see through it. So you've got to kind of get your bearings as to where you are in the circuit, because it's not as clear, obviously, as when it's not raining. But I loved it. I love racing in the rain.
Always, it's interesting to me. I love the glass up there, you know, with the IndyCar, with the new design, but the way they put the shield up there, they were testing. And then I look over at F1, and they put a tricycle on the front of the car.
Yeah. Is that ugly, or is that
it's the
ugly?
Worst thing I've ever seen. I'm like, really? That's all you could come up with?
Mercedes spends, I heard, about $400 million a car. And that's the best design they can come up with, is that, like you said, a tricycle on the front of it. But it's for the right reason. It's just, I think, a really bad execution. I mean, I read an article where the manager of the Mercedes team said, if you give me a hacksaw, I'll take it off right now. So I don't think everybody's really happy with it. But open wheel racing is inherently dangerous. That's the one part of your body that's out in the open is your head. And as we've seen on multiple occasions, when everything lines up in the wrong way, it can be fatal.
Yeah. You know, I mean, the greatest example to me is Senna. I mean, with that accident, shouldn't have killed him, right?
Yeah,
it shouldn't have killed him.
The accident shouldn't have killed him, but what physically happened with the piece of suspension that is almost like a spear, there's no helmet in the world that could stop that from happening. And it was the same sort of accident, if you want, as Hinchcliffe's at Indianapolis, where a piece of suspension went through the monocoque in this case, and it was just like being attacked by somebody with a spear in the medieval ages. It went all the way out the back of his back, and it was just terrible. So racing is inherently extremely dangerous, and sometimes we try to make things better by making changes, and they don't always work properly. But every time I think about Senna's accident, I sit here and say, you know, what a silly thing to happen. Every death is terrible, but that one really was uncalled for.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that's one of those movies that I own and I probably watch two or three times a year. I just, something about him. To watch Senna, that documentary. I didn't race and I wasn't there at the time, but to see the impact he had on not just that sport, but every driver. It's not a driver that comes up here to Detroit, Eddie, for the Detroit Grand Prix. If I go, how many times have you watched Senna? From Joseph Newgarden to the mayor to any open-wheel driver I've ever talked to will look at me and go, oh yeah, I own it. I've watched it. I have to watch it.
Oh, I saw most of that live. He was racing when I was racing from
right.
The one, and I was there when he came up. And he was just different. I actually think he was from Mars and not from Earth. We have yet to prove that.
So
he was very focused human being.
And when you watch him and what they did with him and Alain Prost, I mean, they were the perfect foils for each other.
Yeah, they were. Opposite. I was Prost's teammate in 1 year. And I think it was 83, 84. And Prost was a lot more of a you have a lot more of an academic approach to racing than Senna. Whenever you saw Senna, he'd pull rabbits out of his hat, not once a race, but 50 times a race.
And right.
That there was no limit to what he would try everything, and most of the time he got away with it. So that battle that he and Prost had in McLaren, that came down to the last race, I think it was in Japan, where they just locked each other up and neither car could move, leaving the chicane. It was like watching two rhinoceroses just locked in to each other, and they can't go anywhere. And it was something.
I've
never seen that again in racing.
I thought it was like two fourth graders trying to get on the school bus at the same time, and they just refused to give up.
Yeah.
And they were just wedged in the door. They weren't going to move, man.
Yeah.
So on that point, to get back to IndyCar, Eddie, I've always watching Joseph Newgarden over the past couple of years. When he won at Iowa and lapped the whole field a couple of years ago, and remember, it was one of the most amazing wins. I remember watching him going, oh, my God, this guy is so fast. But he's always so aggressive, and he's still aggressive. But now that he's a Penske guy, and you saw it last year competing for the championship and the points, is he evolving as a driver, or is this just part of, I hate to say corporate, but is it part of the corporate mindset when you drive for Penske that there's a bigger picture?
I think it's been a really, and I don't want, this will sound negative towards other drivers, but it's definitely not said with that in mind. I think it's been a very long time, probably since when Al Jr. ended up driving for Penske, that an American driver with so much talent has been put in an environment like Penske's. And I think that Joseph will, he's already proven it, winning in his first year. But I think Joseph will achieve things at Penske, if fate is on his side, that very few would have imagined 2 or 3 years ago that he was capable of doing. So getting back to that race he had in Iowa, it was just a perfect execution. You have to understand that when you drive for Penske, the pressure is different. Most of the drivers have the pressure of trying to find sponsorship and trying to get to the next race and trying to make the equipment last. When you race at Penske, the only responsibility you have is to get the absolute most out of the equipment that you're in on every time you're sitting in the car. And, you know, it's a different system to work within, and few drivers have really managed to do that. Caster Nevis did in a certain way at Indy by winning 3 Indianapolis 500s. Simon Pagenaud has done the same thing, but everybody thought Pagenaud was the next big thing.
Yeah, after Will, he was kind of going to be the guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, bingo, here comes Newgarden, and he didn't destroy Simon, but it was pretty much Simon spent most of the year trying to catch up to him.
And now,
I don't know if I answered your question.
No, you did, actually. I mean, to me, that's always interesting when you talk about the larger teams. And like you said, you're empowered, for lack of a better word. You're empowered because you know you got to go out there and just get the best out of your car. You don't have to worry about that other stuff. And Newgarden is kind of the face of IndyCar right now, I would assume. I mean, when you see him when we're talking about it, right?
He's the face of open-wheel motor racing on the North American continent.
There you go. We're watching Alexander Rossi and seeing, you know, what he did with the amazing race and this year and the exposure for him and Alex and them. You see some more of the Honda guys, the team's getting stronger this year as well. Are there drivers maybe that we're not so familiar with that we should keep an eye on?
Look at all this new batch of rookies.
Yeah, that's why there's. I don't know who they all are, Eddie. That's what I'm saying. I'm like, I'm sitting going, I know they're great drivers, but damn, I don't know how they race or what to expect.
How would you like to be in my place? I've got to do the broadcast in 3 days, and I don't know who they are.
You can just wing your way right through it, Eddie. You'll be fine.
But they're all. They all come from really good, strong racing backgrounds. Every one of them. They're all different. There's a lot of different countries. There's some, as always, some phenomenal new Brazilians. There's some new Americans. There's some Canadians. They're from all over the place. I think the fact that the global economy has lifted itself up in the last year and a half, there's more opportunities for drivers to find corporations that will back them. There is no racing without sponsorship. And there is no success for any race car drivers unless they're in a good team with good equipment. So I think there'll be... It won't be limited to one or two teams anymore. And Penske will have their hands full, but Penske remains the team that everybody has to beat. If you want to win races, you have to first beat Penske, then beat Ganassi, and beat Andretti, and then there's a whole slew of teams that arrive.
So we have the new car, which is stunning. It's a beautiful car, and I know everyone talked about limited testing, but I can never imagine a time where a team's going to go to their governing body and go, "Yep, we got enough testing, thanks." I mean, but I'm looking at the track for St. Pete, Eddie, and I'm thinking to myself, there's a lot of, it's fast, but there's a lot of lateral G moments, like 2 and 3, where they kind of transition, and 11 and 12, I kind of circled it on the track. Those points, to me, you as a driver, I've always been told, those are the ones that beat you up. The straightaway, you know what you're doing, but those high-speed transition moments where you're just getting thrown left and right, that's got to be not only hard on the body, but on these new cars to find out what you got.
Well, the newness of the cars, there have been a few mechanical changes. The newness of the cars are the aerodynamic package, which just looks totally different. But they're trying to get all the downforce out of the bottom of the car and less from the wings that are up on top. But you're right. This is a track that really beats up the driver and the car. But what you didn't add, which is really an important element here at St. Pete, is that it's really bumpy in the braking zones. So if they have less downforce, like it seems that they will have, I think it'll be more of a handful to drive. And you're going to see a lot more slipping and sliding, especially once the tires have lost their magic after, I don't know, it could be 5 or 6 laps. So you could see 10 laps of the cars having very limited grip, and the team that is capable to stretch the goodness of their tires out over a long run will be the one that will be tough to beat.
And then you're going to have it with the younger drivers too, I'd imagine, a bumpy track, trying to prove themselves. This is like a recipe for a lot of bumping.
It's the brewing of a big storm.
So you guys, just around, Eddie Cheever, thank you so much for the time. I know you guys getting out there to the track. IndyCar on ABC this Sunday at St. Pete, 12:30 start. Great job with the visor cams. The onboard cameras are amazing to watch, especially like in 4K. There's a moment where on some of the road courses, you actually, as a fan, when I'm watching, I wind up holding my breath.
I think they're great. When we're in the booth trying to understand what a car is doing, you can always get a much better idea once they put that visor cam on. I think they're phenomenal. I believe we're going to have 6 of those this race.
Yep.
So it'll be better still.
So last thing I wanted to ask you, I know your relationship over the, you know, your success with Ford Cosworth. I was reading a couple weeks ago that Cosworth was talking about trying to get back into open wheel racing, and they really pointed at Indy. Do they do that with, like, is that their subtle way of talking to folks at Ford going, "Hey, we're ready. Come on, let's do this."
Could be. Cosworth is a privately owned company now. They have an enormous amount of history, engineering history in racing. Engines have changed dramatically over the last 10 years, and I think you're going to see even a faster evolution now into the future. But I would say it's too much of a stretch to tell Ford, "Hey, we're ready if you guys are ready." But Ford has really not voiced any interest in wanting to race in IndyCar. So I don't know how that will go. But since it is a private company, it might do an engine for Mazda. Could do an engine for a variety of different companies.
You don't even think about Mazda.
Mazda's very and I'm not – I have no information. I just pulled that one out of thin air to answer your question. But Cosworth is capable of doing an engine that would be successful.
There you go.
I'm quite sure.
Eddie Cheever, I appreciate you taking the time out. We'll stay in touch. We'll see you up here in Detroit for the duels as well. And watching you in St. Pete this weekend. I've been waiting way too long to get IndyCar back on the road, man. This is going to be a fun year.
Me too. Good to speak to you, and I'll see you in Detroit.
Absolutely. Thanks, Eddie. There he goes, Eddie Cheever, IndyCar on ABC, St. Pete, the kickoff of the season this Sunday, 12:30 p.m. Give me a lot of great stuff. Open wheel racing, if you haven't watched IndyCar, a lot of people get locked up, you know, like, "Well, I watch this type of racing." Watch open wheel racing. They are so aggressive. They are so aggressive. And Newgarden is, wow, for a guy who's the champion, man, the dude just lays it out there. It'll be interesting to see how this all shakes out. All right, moving from IndyCar, we're going to keep it kind of the racing feel for this edition of In the Garage. What's happening in NASCAR, I was interested because Kevin Harvick has just been kicking everybody's ass. Atlanta, and then, you know, winning the next race in Las Vegas. But they were talking about this little dent. Now, you'll have to see it, and we'll put a picture up on our page. You can see it in the right rear over the on the roof. It kind of just knocks down its speed. Here's Chase Elliott talking about it with his crew chief during the race.
See that right rear of that Ford's glass? Is it bowed down? The right side of the glass. Yep, kind of where the jack, between the orange jack screw and the black lining, it's bowed from the right side of the jack screw over.
Yeah, right by the K. When he's up to speed, I think pushes down about, I don't know, 2 inches, 3 inches.
Now, the final bit of audio here, this is Dale Jr. from his podcast on NBCSN. They were discussing this, and Dale was talking about how people have always kind of changed the rules and how drivers look at it.
Chase Elliott seeing this particular instance on the four car and bringing it up to his crew chief, that's common too. I mean, I spent the last 5 years of my career telling my crew chief
you did.
Anything I saw on the car
yeah.
that I thought might help that car around me.
Yeah.
Where his track bar looked like it was, you know, is his track bar high on the right side or low on the right side or the left side? Where's his damn track bar at? Does the car look like it's dog tracking? Does he look like he's making skew somewhere? I think that what we're seeing out of Harvick's car in these pictures is it's new in that space, which makes it so interesting to everybody who sees it.
So there's Dale Jr. Now, to me, what's interesting about this is, I think it was Kyle Petty said this too, that in the past, if you saw a team or a driver had an advantage, a certain advantage on something, you would take note of it and then you would implement it for yourself. You wouldn't turn them in so much. The drivers seem to be policing each other more and more and getting more aggressive about this. And then you have the social media aspect. People on Reddit and Twitter and Instagram and any platform, when they see something funky, they're going to send it. Like Chase Elliott, for example, last year, there was a crew guy who was actually, when they were pushing the car out, he was peeling tape off the spoiler. Just, you know, to give him a little less downforce, get the car a little more speed. And there were fans on Reddit, I think it was, that were taking pictures of Harvick's car going, what the hell is that? Is that cheating? Because that dent, again, was not there. So, you know, you're talking about this now with Harvick, and it's interesting to me. I want to find this because we're talking about playoff points. Yeah, there it is. Yesterday, last night, he was actually docked playoff points for an illegal winning car. It's NASCAR. They're going to figure out what they can do to get, you know, get an advantage. That's part of the racing makes it so compelling to me is these guys will just go as far as they possibly can. Back in the old days, I remember hearing the thing when restrictor plates first came in, they would use metal that would pass inspection but would dissolve quickly when it was immersed in gasoline. So the car would do that. They would tell them how to use fuel lines. They would run fuel lines all through the car so they get extra gas in the car. Or even going back to the really old days, when they first told them they had to have roll cages in the car, they would get dowel wood, make it to look like a roll cage, paint it black, and screw it in there. Didn't help them at all. But you're talking about guys who drove, like David Pearson drove around smoking a cigarette. So NASCAR, I mean, you think about it. NASCAR is built to be outside the law. That was how it was started. It was a bunch of moonshine runners who wanted to see who was the best one. So that is kind of the whole thing with NASCAR. I know some people get upset about it. And I could kind of tell that Kyle Petty was maybe a little tweaked that the drivers were narking each other out, for lack of a better word. But it's going to be an interesting race. Phoenix this week, another track that Kevin Harvick just owns. Kevin Harvick could be out there in a go-kart and he'd probably cover everybody. All right. Open wheel racing, NASCAR, F1's doing their testing with the tricycle thing on the front of the car. Ugh. Thanks again to Eddie Cheever. You can follow me on Twitter at WCSXJim. Go to WCSX.com in the garage. Automotive reviews in there, video. We talk about a lot of stuff. The 2018 Ram truck, the 2018 Hyundai Sonata. We'll have the new one up from the VW Atlas as well. Spent a week with that. Great car. So-so motor. Don't put a four-cylinder in a three-row SUV. Just saying. Anyway, you can check all that out. Subscribe here on iTunes. We'll talk soon. Have a great week. Thanks again, Eddie. That was fun.